Let's talk about this form called Buyer's Inspection Advisory. It's stuck on the back of the 8-page purchase contract, and to be honest with you, I think that many agents skip it altogether, and yet from a buyer's point of view, this might be the most important part of the contract. Because what it does is it warns the buyer over and over and over again about their duty and their right to inspect the property. Now, obviously, rights and duties are different. Rights are something you don't have to do. You have the right to do them. You have the right to inspect. But what about duty? Well, the contract very clearly states you have an affirmative duty to exercise reasonable care to protect yourself. That's actually right out of the Civil Code, Civil Code 2079.5, where it says you have a duty to protect yourself, meaning that if you see something, you can't just sit back and say, well, I didn't follow up on it. So that's why it's important for you to point out issues to clients, and then they have to make a decision. But let's talk about the contract more clearly and what the buyer's advisory says. It's warning the buyer about some things like the physical condition of the property is not guaranteed. And that's pretty clear, isn't it? And you should conduct thorough investigations of the property personally and with inspectors. So it's telling them that they should be doing that. A general physical inspection does not cover all aspects of the property, which means what? Too often, we as agents kind of limit our clients in what we should be doing. They say, well, what should I inspect? I can tell you an interesting story. In that class I teach at UC Berkeley that I've talked about earlier, I ask people, what would you like to inspect on the property? And then I shut up. And you know what they say? Everything. I mean, why would a buyer not want to investigate everything? Well, first of all, it would be too expensive, wouldn't it? But I do tell them that you should at least inspect the home inspection, but the home inspection is in theory supposed to be checking everything. There's a problem with that. One problem is nobody knows everything, so a guy maybe not know that much about electrical, who doesn't know enough about structural, et cetera, et cetera. It's a general overview. It's like going to a GP doctor. The other thing we typically inspect is pest control. Most transactions that I see have at least a home inspection and pest control, but I'm going to go over some other areas when you really think about it that talk about things the buyer should be inspecting, and that's why it's saying a thorough investigation is very different than a home inspection. It also goes on to warn them that if the professionals in their initial inspection recommend further inspection, then it's recommended that you should follow those up as well. And you think about how many buyers say, I'm not willing to do that secondary inspection because it costs extra money. Now, why is this important? It's important because this is going to come up during the trial. Remember I said earlier that most litigation comes from buyers suing sellers. So they say, the seller didn't tell me, the seller didn't tell me. So it's going to be asked of the buyer, did you read this addendum and this advisory? And did you do all the things you were supposed to do? So we wind up with some comparative negligence where the buyer knew about a problem, but they didn't investigate it, and the seller should have disclosed it, and they didn't. So many times the buyer thinks they're going to hit a home run, and they only hit a single. The form also very clearly reaffirms for the seller that they have a duty to disclose material facts. Remember we talked about it earlier, what a material fact was, something that mattered. And the problem is the sellers sometimes think, well, let's let the buyers find the problems. But unfortunately, that's not what the contract says, and it also isn't what the law says the seller's duty is. And then about three or four times more in the heading of this form, it says that the buyer has a duty, buyer has a duty. And this is what it finally says in bold, all caps. You are strongly advised to investigate the condition and suitability of all aspects, keyword, all aspects of the property. If you do not do so, you are acting against the advice of your agents. So it's like, don't come back and blame me because you were an idiot. But you remember, you're the one that's advising the client up front. When we meet with a client, you should be telling them when we get to an inspection paragraph, this is going to cost quite a bit of money to investigate this property because it's 82 years old. Maybe we should spend a little more money on it. You know, you're spending $500,000 or $1 million or whatever you're spending on it. Let's set this aside. That discussion should happen early so that when the bills come in for the buyer to pay for the inspections, they're not whining and moaning about it because they expected it. And if you're on a hillside property, we should be telling people it's going to be a lot more than that. So let's look at the individual issues that are raised in this contract. You were advised to conduct investigations of the entire property. It says that again. What's that, about the fourth or fifth time? But are not limited to. It starts with general condition of the property and its systems. Foundation, When's the last time you saw a foundation inspection? This is saying it should be investigated. So when the foundation's bad and they blame the seller for not disclosing it, during a trial your buyer's going to be said, weren't you warned to investigate everything about the property? And the first thing the contract says is foundation. Why didn't you get a foundation inspection? You know what they're going to say? They're going to turn and look at their agent and say, my agent didn't tell me to do that. Now, does every house need a foundation inspection? Probably not. But can you see how this gets turned around in litigation against your client? The next thing it says is roof. Does every house get a roof inspection? Normally not. Plumbing, heating, air conditioning, electrical, mechanical, security. When's the last time you had a security system inspected? Pool, spa, structural and non-structural systems, components, fixtures, appliances, any personal property included in the sale, energy efficiency of the building, and on and on and on. It has a whole list of them. Then it says structural engineers are best suited to determine possible design and construction defects. When's the last time you called a structural engineer in on an inspection? This is warning the buyer, and I can tell you this is used against buyers in litigation because they're being warned what they should investigate. Now think about it. This is what a home inspector typically looks at it, isn't it? Now, this is a two-page contract, and that's only one little paragraph about an inch long. So what else does it say? The next paragraph it talks about is square footage, age, and boundaries. I don't know how many times I've been involved in litigation or disputes and mediations where clients are complaining like, the seller lied to me about the square footage or the age of the property or the lot size or whatever. Let me read what this warning or advisory, isn't an advisory a warning? This is a warning to the buyer. Square footage, room dimensions, lot size, age of improvements, and boundaries, and any numerical statement regarding these items are approximations only, have not been verified, and cannot be verified by the broker. Isn't that somewhat of a clue? Telling you it shouldn't be relied upon because it hasn't been verified. So if it's something that's important to you as a buyer, and that's the discussion I would be having with my clients when I'm going over this document, is this something that matters to you? And if it is, then you know and I know that every MLS is probably wrong as far as the square footage or what's the verification for that? Where do we get it from? The county recorder? Did an appraiser measure it? We don't know what it is, but the point is don't come back and sue the seller by square footage issues when they're going to have this little form rolled up and stuffed down their throat during the trial by the other attorney. It also says fences, hedges, walls, retaining walls, and other natural barriers do not necessarily verify property boundaries. So that's always an issue, isn't it? Where's the property line? And the point is, just because it's a fence doesn't mean that. So what do we have to tell our clients? We have to tell our clients just what this says. If you want to verify the condition, what are you going to have to do? You're probably going to have to, first of all, look at the prelim and see if it looks anything like what the property lines are that are on the property. I was on a case a while back where the property, as far as the prelim map showed, was that it wasn't a rectangle. In fact, it was angled pretty dramatically at the back of the property. Now, when you go to the property itself and look at it, it was actually fenced as a rectangle. So one of the questions I was asked, Mr. Berry, do you think that a reasonably competent agent would compare the physical things that you see when you look at a property with the prelim? And the prelim was very dramatic, and I think I had to say I would look at the prelim and realize the map was different than what I was seeing, yes. So you could see it's saying that it doesn't necessarily mean that. So Mr. Buyer, do you want to make sure and verify where the property lines are? Yes, I do. Well, that might mean that we have to get a survey. Are you willing to do that? Because it might cost a couple $1,000s. No, I'm not. Well, I'm going to recommend to you that if you want to find that out, then you better do it. So I'm going to probably be sending that client an email saying, we did discuss this. I advised you to get a survey if that was a material fact that bothered you, and you've chosen not to do that. Because I'm going to protect myself against people that are going to have memory loss. It also goes on to say in this same paragraph, professionals such as appraisers, architects, surveyors, and civil engineers are best suited to determine square footage, dimensions, or property lines. The next thing it talks about is pests. Presence of conditions likely to lead to presence of wood-destroying pests and organisms can be separated into two sections, Section 1 and Section 2, and so that's something you need to discuss with your buyer. Now, the next one is an issue I really, really want to talk to you about, because one of the most common lawsuits we have are issues having to do with drainage and soil. The next one says soil stability. The existence of fill or compacted soil, expansive or contracting soil, susceptibility to slippage, settlement, movement, or adequacy of drainage is something that the buyer is advised to investigate. Now, it also goes on to say that geotech engineers are best suited to determine such conditions, the causes, and the remedies. Now, don't you think that any hillside property has a potential for landslides, mudslides, drainage issues, et cetera, et cetera? I remember a property that I was on a case. When you went outside the back door, you looked up and there was a hill at a dramatic angle, and nobody thought to check out the soil stability or the drainage. Now, where's the water going to come when it starts raining? It ran right down the hill into the house. It just was so logical when you saw it in retrospect. But when you think about it, that should have been something that was thought about up front. And of course, there was a lawsuit and agents got blamed, and there was no soil inspection, and there was no drainage inspection, and no geotech engineer. So this is really critical, that if you have a property that's on any kind of a hillside, that means the water is going to run in the direction of wherever that angle is. So think about that and tell the buyer that if that's the kind of property we're going to be showing you, you should probably plan on a geotech engineer. I don't know how much one costs in your area, but here it's anywhere from $700 to $2,000, depending about how extensive it is. So you obviously should add that to any cost of a pest control and a home inspection that you're planning. So a buyer that you're trying to sell a hillside property to should plan on a couple thousand dollars for investigations. The next issue it talks about is roof. Obviously, water damage is one of the most common litigation issues, so roof is critical. So is it okay that the home inspector does the inspection? I've seen home inspections where the inspector didn't do a very good job on the roof inspection. In fact, I saw one recently where it said that the roof was inspected from the ground. He didn't have a ladder that was high enough to get on the roof. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I'm also involved in litigation right now on a $14 million house that's 19,000 square feet, if you can believe it, and the roof inspection was $150. Hello? How much inspection was done for $150? They admitted during the trial that they didn't do very much. They just did an overview. Well, that's not adequate. It doesn't really make any sense. So it says that roof contractors are best suited to determine these conditions. So if your buyer really cares about the roof, or you have any issues about the roof, or the seller during the TDS had said they had prior leaks, or whatever the issue is, I would think it's worth the time to bring a professional out that's a roof professional, not just a home inspector. Now, it also talks about pools and spas. Now, obviously, a pool contractor is the only one qualified to do that. The next thing it talks about is waste disposal. What is waste disposal? Is it on the sewer system or is it a septic system? If it's a septic system, then we've got all kinds of issues to find out where is the septic tank located. Can we find it? I've had them hidden under decks. I've had them paved over a driveway where the tank is under that. It's never been pumped. When was the last time it was checked? Is it adequate for the size of the family? Because you can have an 80-year-old man living in a house with a septic tank, and then a family of four moves in where you're running the washing machine all day long, and all of a sudden we have a lawsuit because it's inadequate. It's going to cost $150,000 to put the new system in. Where are the leach lines becomes an issue. I don't know if you've thought about it. I know that on the case I was on, this client was looking for the perfect house up in the mountains, and it's very hard to find a house with a flat piece of land sometime in the mountains. But they found one where you look out through the living room and this beautiful window, and that's where they were going to put the pool, and they got ready to put the pool in and found out that's where the septic leach lines were, so they couldn't put the pool in. So they wanted to rescind the contract. So there's some real issues that are specific to rural properties that you better pay attention to. And if you're not a rural agent and you have mountain area property where there's sewers and septics and power problems and all kinds of propane issues, then I recommend that you refer your client to someone else. The next issue is water and well systems. So if you have a property that's being serviced by something other than city water, I think you need to really spend some time on that. Is it a private water system? If it is, how much does it cost? Is there contracts to be looked at? Are there transfer fees? There's all kinds of issues there. What if the property is serviced by a well? There's even more issues on a well. So what needs to be checked there? One is water quality. Obviously, quality is an important thing. And quality includes taste and odor and sediment and all kinds of issues about bacteria and whatever, so that water has to be tested. What about the adequacy of water? How much water are you getting? Because it's very common in certain areas that you have plenty of water in the winter, and then in the summer you don't have water, or you're very low pressure, or you don't have enough to satisfy your needs. So that's a question. What about condition of the units itself? What about your pump? What about your windmill? What about whatever's driving the water? Has that been tested? There's all kinds of issues around well systems that I think are beyond the capacity of most agents. So if you have that issue again and you've got a well, bring in a professional and try to get it tested.